staff or what?
Oh, you can go.
Okay. Hey, everybody. It's 1 o'clock, and it's going to be Let's Grill Jeannie today, and next week will be David. So hopefully you won't be too disappointed. He has a meeting that he can't get out of, so I'm replacing him today. So how is everyone? Today is November the 7th. I can't believe in just a couple of weeks we're at Thanksgiving time. It's just unbelievable. We want to welcome all the new students from the New York Boot Camp that just went on last weekend. And we have some upcoming events to talk about. The business building event, November 15th and 16th in Rockland, Mass., taught by Dave. The sponsorship event, November 17, 18, and 19 in Rockland, Mass., and that will be taught by Nitzan Mosery, and we'll have 17 sponsors there for everybody to pick their brain and figure out what kind of deals they want to sponsor and what, if anything, they will put up for money. We have Jeff headed out to the San Francisco Immersion Training next week, November 17, 18, and 19. And I will be going to the commercial training December 1, 2, and 3 in Los Angeles. So we got a lot of things going on. Here's a high five for this week will be Prince King, who is very, very excited. He purchased a sixth unit 2 weeks ago. He found the property on Craigslist, and he was able to negotiate $15,126 at the closing. Congratulations, Prince. We're excited for him. Operator, are you with us today?
Hi, Jeannie. This is Lillian. I'll be the operator for today. How are you?
Hi, Lillian. I'm fine. And how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Good. So I'll ask the first question that was emailed to me, and then I'll open it up to you to tell people how to get on and to ask their own questions, okay?
Sounds good.
All right. So the first question comes from Mark Magnuson, who's been very busy sending me over questions. What content does a typical quarterly call for investors include, and what do monthly quarterly reports sent to investors include? A lot. So the reports gives you a financial overview of expenses, traffic coming in and out of the property, who leased, who didn't lease, how much. It has an executive summary, a balance sheet, an income statement, a variance report, a box score, a market survey, and a bank statement. So there is a ton of information in our reports. They're 35 to 40 pages long. And when we do a call with the investors, we let them know if there was any deferred maintenance that has been handled. We let them know how that's coming, how the property management company is doing, the marketing efforts, where we're posting up on Craigslist, how many times a day, et cetera. So there's a lot that goes on in the call, and we always open it up so people can ask questions. His other question is, how does it work when an investor wants to get out of the deal, for example, in year 2 of 5? They're out of luck. They sign an agreement, an operating agreement, which states they are in the deal for the length of the deal. So unless it's a dire emergency, they are in that deal. So what happens if somebody has a dire emergency? You first, and this is in your operating agreement, have to put it out to the other investors in the group. They're allowed 30 to 45 days to make a decision to buy their shares. If they don't buy them, then you go out to the managing members of the deal. So that would be you and your sponsor. If you guys don't pick up their shares, then you could go outside of the group. But know this to be true. They're not going to get the full amount of money they put up back. They're only going to get whatever they're willing to pay based on the property. So it's really hard to get out of a deal once you've committed to it. And his third question is, on cash flow paid quarterly to investors, as an example, the investor invests $100,000 and the preferred portion of the anticipated cash flow is 8%. Is it accurate the investor would be paid 2% every quarter, 8% for the year? Another confusion is this cash flow return of 8% or 8% of their original investment. Well, it's based on the cash flow that's remaining in the deal. They're getting 8% of that, and typically it's return of principal before profit. So just so you know. But you can pretty much count on $2,000 a quarter if you're paying quarterly. In some of our properties, we pay monthly, and they get a certain portion monthly. That is the end of his questions on this sheet. So, operator, do you have any questions from anybody?
Jeannie, there are no questions at the moment. I just want to remind, if you would like to ask a question, please press star zero on your telephone keypad, star zero for questions, please. Thank you.
Okay, my next question is from Tina Wheatland from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. When looking for investors, how many is too much on any particular deal? And one of the videos mentioned having a minimum amount for investors to agree to in order to be considered an investor. What is a common reasonable minimum amount? So number one, you can have unlimited accredited investors in any deal, but you are only limited to 35 sophisticated investors in one deal. Our minimums, we like 100, but we will never go lower than 50,000. You want to keep your investors to a minimum because it's less labor intensive, less money for K-1s at the end of the year, less money to create checks and payroll and that whole stuff. So you try to keep it to a minimum. So if you're trying to raise $1 million, the most investors you should have in that deal is 10. That's the most. If you do all 50s, you're talking 20 investors in that one deal. So it becomes really tedious for whoever's cutting the checks. So that was Kina's question.
Jeannie.
Yes.
This is Jermaine. Can you just explain the difference between types of investors, sophisticated investors, and so that way they understand it? Because some people may not know that, what that the difference
okay.
of is.
An accredited investor by the SEC rule is someone that earns $200,000 a year or $300,000 with their spouse, or they have net worth equal to $1 million, not including their primary residence. So a sophisticated investor is somebody who has a working knowledge of real estate but just doesn't meet the income guideline or the net worth guideline. But they certainly have, you know, real estate holdings, and they know real estate very well. So in our deals, Dave likes to use all accredited investors. I usually let one, maybe two, in a deal. If I know them really well, I let them in. He likes to have all accredited because they're going to be less whiny if they're committed to 8% return and it comes in at 7.9, they may get, oh, what happened? And they're gloom and dooming. But I like to give a chance to the people to invest with us, and I'll let one or two in the deal. And that's what the difference is. Any other questions, operator?
Jeannie, actually, one just came in. Let me get that name for you.
Thank you, Lillian. We're getting into winter here. It's gloomy and it's dark around 4:30 at night, and we're getting up and it's dark because we had daylight savings time here. And we're turning the heat on Thursday this week because it's going to be 38 degrees.
And my recommendation is anybody who's coming next week, make sure you bring a jacket.
Yep.
Because it's going to be cold.
Bring a winter coat.
I'm going climbing on Saturday with my thermals.
With your thermals and
yeah,
gloves,
my,
I hope.
Yeah, my clam bed's not frozen. Yeah, I'm hoping the clam bed's not frozen, but yeah.
We're ready, Lillian.
Okay, our first question comes from Chip. Chip, please go ahead.
Hello there, Jeannie. This is Chip Heller and from sunny Southern California. We're getting cold weather, too. It's getting all the way down into the 60s here.
Oh, my God. That's a heat wave for us.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you should feel sorry for us. And it's good to hear Jeff on the call. I met Jeff when I did the immersion training back in, I think it was February or March in Orange County. Jeannie.
Hi, Chip.
I've been doing a lot of – hi there, Jeff. We've been doing a lot of underwriting for properties that are under 50 units, and we keep my partner and I, we keep kind of getting a little foiled when we get to payroll. At what time, at what point in unit count do you start putting money in for payroll, and how much?
Well, I would say any time you reach over 25 units, you should be considering. It depends on the setup, too. I mean, if it's at least 50 units, you have to have payroll. But I say you could have a part-time manager, so you would have payroll on 25 units. It just depends on the setup and if there is an office for a part-time manager who will also act as your leasing agent. So... Jeff, do you have a better answer than that?
Yeah, it all depends on if you have it on site. Being in California, as you are, if you have 15 units or above, you need some type of manager, on-site manager, over there. So it's
right. Well, we're not looking in California though. We're trying to stay away from California. You know, we've been confused as to when, I mean, most of the people that I've talked to say, you know, if you're under 50, 60 units, you know, you don't really need to have a part-time leasing manager on the premises. But then what point do you start having a maintenance person that you need there enough to have them on payroll?
I would say 100 units, at least for a maintenance guy, you got to have one. On 100 units, but
right.
You can do contract services, you know, for under that, but it just depends on the setup. If it has an office for a manager, then you want to hire one and have the payroll there because they're going to keep your property operational and you're not going to have to worry about it.
Yes,
right.
50 units, you have a part-time office manager and a part-time maintenance guy. Up to 50 units, you're going to have a part-time office manager and a part-time maintenance person.
And maybe you can use the same guy to do both.
Yeah, and they'll be working about 20 hours a week there. So.
And you think, Jeff, that they could double as a leasing agent and a maintenance and still be on part-time?
Yeah, on that side, right? You want to get a manager, an on-site manager that has maintenance experience too, so they can do both roles.
Yeah. Okay, and then once you get to 100, then you're looking at a full-time leasing agent, full-time maintenance.
Yeah,
manager.
At 75, your part-time manager and maintenance person is going to be working about 30 hours. So this is what you do, right? It's like when you're looking, so you're in an area, right? Identify some property management companies that take care of like 50 units and below, and then call them up and tell them like the age of the building, the size of it. Then ask them what they require for staffing, because we know it varies. Because like I said, in California, it's 15 and above. But ask them what they need for staffing. Call up like two or three, and then ask them what they pay. What do you pay per hour for a on-site manager and a maintenance person? And where's the breakage, right? If they do lower than 50, like if they do around 20, ask them where the breakage is in the contract where they're where you don't have to do the payroll, where they're like in their contract with you, that they're going to charge you for leasing up units, for make readies, things like that, where they'll take care of that. So it would be an additional fee that comes in. You'll have your like maybe 10%, 8% management fee, then what the extras are for the make readies, for the leasing up a unit. But
I
then
see.
If you ask them that, you get a really good handle on what's going on in that market for payroll, because it'll be different in different markets what that hourly rate's going to be. And you want to get a good qualified one, so find out what a good quality on-site manager would get part-time or full-time in that market.
Okay. Okay, I think that helps. Thank you
question?
Very much.
Do you have any other questions?
I don't think so, Jeannie. I think that's it today. Thank you so much. Jeff, nice to hear your voice again.
Yep.
Good talking to you, Chip. Thank you.
Okay, up next we have Roger. Roger, please go ahead.
Hey, it's Roger from sunny Southwest Florida. Jeannie and Jeff, how are you?
Good. We're going to see you next week, huh?
You are, yeah. 84 degrees here at the moment. The idea, I don't know where my winter coat is. But
you better be bringing double coats to you.
Oh, geez, that's a shocker. We keep running into something. I'm just wondering how common it is. Everybody wants cash. We had a deal in northern Florida. We were 50,000 higher than all the other guys. But somebody's father came in from California with, you know, $4 million of cash, and they took it away with cash. We're dickering on one now. When the other guy, he's after, you know, he wants $75,000 down, and then as soon as the due diligence period is over, another $75,000, and, you know, just, and he wants money to go hard. And I sit down and talk with my friendly banks. Well, you know, we really need 75 days, so 60 days would be a squeeze. And the sellers, of course, want a thing to close right away. And I just wondered if you have any great suggestions or experience, or everybody has the same problem. It just seems to be ongoing and getting worse, actually.
Well, you know, that's the nature of the beast. Maybe you got to go a little bit lower in your search, go with under the radar. So you're dealing with the 100 and over, maybe go under 80. You're not going to have that kind of competition.
Yeah, it's just, and I understand the owners. I mean, they don't want to tie it up for 60 days. They want to see some money hard. But, you know, when you talk to a bank, I mean, there's no way they're going to give you a commitment short term. It's just stuff. So you kind of
got to find a motivated seller.
Yeah, and a motivated banker. Okay. Well, I just thought
I'd that too.
It seems to be a big problem. Okay. Thank you for your
Okay, Red. All right. See you next week.
Yep, for sure.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
Okay, I have another. So do you know when the certification program will start? Well, we're getting close, and I would say within the next 2 to 3 weeks, it'll be done. Let's just give it a benchmark of around December, because I get a lot of these questions. But I know they're getting really close, and people have been working on it daily. So we'll see about that. Here's Mark Magnuson again. Let's see. Another question for the call today. What is the best answer when an investor asks me, so I'm putting in $100,000, what is your skin in the game? Well, you're putting up the earnest money deposit, whether you have it or you go to a hard money lender to get it or not. You're running the deal, managing the asset, and you also have your acquisition fee in the deal. So that's the answer that I have. Do you have anything better than that, Jeff?
No, you basically nailed it, Jeannie.
Oh, gee, you guys. Flattery will get you nowhere. Here's one from Todd Travis. I might be on the call. Here is a question I came up with when I brought up syndication with somebody. What, if any, recourse do investors have if the property goes into foreclosure? Well, boy, that's gloomy. Most of the time, you are going to have a non-recourse loan, which means that the property could go into foreclosure and they may or may not lose all of their money. But that's the risk that you run doing real estate. But if you, nobody's going to go after their personal property, their personal residence at all, because it's under an LLC umbrella. So, I mean, you just don't go into foreclosure without fair warning. I mean, you can change management companies. There's a lot of little steps you can do when you see that the property's not running properly, but you got to keep your eye on the ball at every single opportunity. And then you can maybe even make a deal with the bank that you pay interest only for the time being until you can make the property support itself again. Okay, Jermaine, do you have anything to add to that?
Jeannie, it's hard for me to answer anything if you keep saying the right things all the time.
Well, I'm just flying off the cuff. I just read that.
No, you're right, though. You can't, as far as the, if they come into a deal, everyone knows the risk. Like Dave says all the time, he even said it in the call a couple of weeks ago, that he'll tell his investors, you know, that there's a possibility that this type of thing can happen, and usually people appreciate that. So, but everyone knows the risk. So, like Jeannie said, you should have forewarning if you're going to be going into some type of foreclosure, so you can basically stop that and make improvements so that the stuff doesn't happen. So, just follow the system.
Yep. And maybe you get some backup. I mean, why would a property go into foreclosure? I don't buy that. I mean, you know well in advance if the property isn't making money, you got to fire the property management company because they didn't do their job. Get somebody in there to kick butt. You cannot pay your investors anything while this is going on. But this is when you start communicating. You communicate daily with these investors to assure them that you're on the ball. But if you take your eye off the ball, it's your fault, and you're not going to be sleeping too good at night, in my opinion, if something goes wrong. Okay, let's see.
I got a question for you, Jeannie.
Okay.
Yep. All right, this just came in. All right. It's from my daughter, Shannon. That goes to Emerson College. She wants to know if you know anyone that works on television, not film, because on the special research project that she's doing, she needs to interview, like I sent out a questionnaire to some people
I
that
do. My niece, Alicia, is behind the scenes on Channel 5. She does the video editing.
She does? Okay. How about
Isn't
any actors?
Isn't that something?
Cool. So, yeah, if any actors or anything like that, if you're listening to the calls, just send me an email if you have anyone. Jay Lindahl, our mentor, and I'll help my daughter do a research project.
There you go. So Jeff used to help Colette do her homework. Then he helped Jonathan, and he roped me into helping him, too, do his homework. And now we're doing Shannon's. He's such a good father. We should be getting all A's. We should be getting all A's. I mean, we helped Dave do his Harvard homework, remember?
Yeah, that's true.
We should get all A's.
So if you have any questions, you got us. You got the three. You got me, Jermaine, and Jeannie. So if you have any questions at all, now's the time to press *0. If you have a deal that you want to talk about, you could do that, too. Garrett. If you have any questions from the Multifamily Millions, or if you just want to introduce yourself and say, like, where you're located, because, like, people are always looking for people with boots on the ground in different markets. So this isn't just about asking Jeannie questions about networking. So, oh, wow, the phone is buzzing now.
Your phone stinks.
Okay, are we ready for our next question?
We are.
Yes.
We are. Jeff,
we have Taylor. Okay, Taylor has a question. Taylor, please go ahead.
Hey, Gina, this is Taylor from San Jose. I'm really new into the real estate investing, and whenever you approach private investors, they always ask me, like explain how the return works. I have no clue how to answer that question whenever they ask.
Okay, so how the returns work is when they come into a deal, they are going to be looking at a property package. The property package is going to outline to them the amount of time you're going to have their money in a deal and what the returns are annually. And then from what you bought the property for to what you sell it for, you're going to pay off the debt service, you're going to pay the broker fees, you're going to pay them back the remaining amount of money they have in the deal, and then there's going to be a pot, and you're going to split it with them, whether it's 50-50 split or if they put up 70, if you have a carve out of 35-65, they're going to get that amount of money. So say the first year you've committed to an 8% preferred rate of return before you take any money. Maybe the next year it goes up to 9. And then the following year it goes up to 10. And then because you're getting it ready for sale, it stays at 10 the following year. And then in the fifth year, it goes to 11. So let's take 11, and 20 is 31, and 9 is 40, and 8 is 48. And divide that by 5, so 48 divided by 5. So it's a 9.6% return that they're getting, which is an average. And then if it's a 50-50 split, so you're taking the 48 plus the 50, divide that by 5 because you're holding it for 5 years, and the annualized rate of return is 19.6. Where are you going to get a 19.6 rate of return annualized? In a bank, in a CD, in the stock market? You're not going to get it anywhere. So I think that's pretty cool. Does that clarify things, Taylor?
Yeah, that does. Thank you.
You're welcome. I can show you in black and white if you want to see it too. What's your email address, and I'll send you a property packet so you can look at it.
It's Pike.
Yeah.
P-I-K-E 293@gmail.com.
Okay. I'll send that over to you today.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay, up next we have Kathy. Kathy, please go ahead.
Hi there. I have a question about student housing, or just in general when you're renting to students. Do you set up the leases differently or something? Because, as you know, the students all leave for the summer or graduate. And do you just assume that things are going to be empty for the summer? You know, do you have year-long leases, nine-month leases? How do you handle that?
Kathy, you know what? I saw that question, and I wrote the answers down, and I skipped right over it. So your parents pay a yearly lease. No, I did see it, and I wrote so much information in there that I skipped right over your name. Sorry. Parents pay a yearly lease. If they want to hold the place for their kid for the next year, they have to pay on a yearly basis. It's to your benefit because they pay yearly, even though 3 months of the year they're not there, they still have to pay the rent. The summer, most of the time the summers are empty in some of these places, but sometimes kids don't go home for the summer. They work, and they produce money, and they take side courses and things like that. So, you know, they have a 12-month lease. Or they lose it. And you have a rental agreement with the parents, and the parents are on the hook for this.
Okay.
Jeff,
that
do you want
sense.
To add
anything?
Do I want anything?
Yes. Most of the time it's a June to June month, but like we prefer August to August because if you have to think, like the leasing season starts right after they come back from winter break. So if you don't get it filled up by the time they leave, then there's no way to recruit them. So sometimes if you have those extra 3 months during the summer, you might be able to get some transfers that are coming in to fill up your things. Because once it starts in September, you won't get people in there unless there's like transfers during the winter semester. But also, sometimes, right, most of the times it's 12-month leases, but if you have a property that is like on the beach where you can get vacation renters coming in that are paying like triple the amount that you're getting from your students, you might just have a 9-month lease only in that situation.
Yeah. Great. Thanks.
Sure.
Welcome.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
No more questions?
Okay.
Oh, man.
What is going on? I feel unpopular these days. I was on the bronze coaching call on Friday, and I had to make up like 10 questions. I don't feel loved. Guys better start asking questions, or I may not want to do this anymore. Not that they will let me pull out of it, but I could go kicking and screaming. Anyway, so everybody got Thanksgiving plans? Jermaine?
Yeah, Jeannie, I'm going that week of Thanksgiving, remember?
I know, and I'll be alone here by myself.
Yep, going to go see my mother-in-law.
That's awesome. I don't hear you talk about in-laws very often. It's always about your family.
Oh, yeah. That's why I got to go see my mother, my mother-in-law, because it's always about my family.
Do you like her cooking?
Yeah, she's okay, but I probably still end up cooking because I'm the best cook, so.
Are you going to bring on Jeannie's gravy?
Oh, I'm going to miss Jeannie's gravy this year. I am not happy. Jeannie, can you freeze some for me? and make sure I have it when I come back on Monday?
How about I teach you how to do it?
I'm telling you, I tried gravy one time. It was a disaster. I'm really not good at it. I'd rather just have your gravy, Jeannie, because it's so good.
Thank you. Yeah, my kids drink my gravy.
You should bring some in on Friday.
Oh, on Friday? Hey,
yeah,
I'm not here Friday this week. I'm taking Thursday and Friday off. I got a 13-year-old granddaughter turning 13 on Friday, so she's having
13? She's a teenager? No way.
Do you believe that, Jeff? I can't even believe it. I remember when Shannon was 13.
Yeah.
And Colette, I can remember.
Wow.
Yep, Juliet, she's 13 on Friday, and she's having 10 kids over. Believe it or not, 9 girls and 1 boy.
So are you cooking them gravy for their...
No, actually, she's picked her menu. She wants macaroni and cheese. She wants chicken fingers. She wants hot dogs. So I'm cooking all of that stuff. But our mac and cheese is homemade. It's not...
You got a mac and cheese recipe?
It's homemade. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I need that. I put scallops in mine. I put scallops.
Oh, well, we don't do that. We got 10, you know, scallops, shrimp. You know how much it would cost me to feed 10 kids mac and cheese?
Oh, put jalapeno. You know what you do? Put jalapeno in it. They won't eat any of it.
They won't eat any.
You make a small batch.
The funny part is
saving you money.
Jeff, I used to try that, and now my kids are so immune to the heat that they love it now, the jalapenos. So, but that is a good idea, Jeannie. Put jalapenos in it. The kids will never eat it. Or any type of hot sauce.
Operator, any other questions?
Yes, we do have a few coming in. Up next, we have Stu. He's actually new. Stu, please go ahead.
Yes, hello, everybody. My name is Stu. My wife and I just attended a boot camp of last Sunday, and we are anxious and very happy to be involved in this business. We learned quite a bit over the days and really looking forward to it. Jermaine, I left you a voicemail in return. We missed you yesterday. You called in when we were out running around town, and you know, I really like this format of listening to questions because it stimulates other thoughts. And the information that we are gleaming every day is substantial. So my wife, Barbara, and I are looking forward to, she's recently retired, and we're looking forward to jumping into this business, which we haven't done already. So I'm very happy to hear all that's going on here.
So, Stu, do we have something like an Australian accent or some kind of accent?
No, we're from New York. I'm a lifelong New Yorker. My wife and I were both born here. I actually was born in the Bronx, and it's the only borough that has the word the in front of it. So my wife is in Queens. I was born in Queens. She's a whole lot smarter than I am. Now she got attracted to me, but I was very lucky. So. She just retired in June.
You're a smart man for recognizing that.
Oh, you know what they say, happy wife, happy life, Jeannie.
Yeah, that's what they say.
Right? Jermaine, you're laughing, so you must agree.
I know, trust me.
Oh, yeah. His wife wears the pants, let me tell you. He's got to ask
her. Her money's hers and my money's hers. Works out great.
Yeah. So
well, welcome
and I,
aboard. We're happy
Barbara
to have you.
In June. Yes.
That's awesome. So anything you need, no matter what, you pick up the phone, you can call Jermaine or I. We're here every single day. And Jeff travels a lot, but Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, he's typically in the office at some point. So the three of us are like the inside coaches here.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Appreciate that, and
looking forward to it. We'll see Stu at the immersion training that's coming up.
That's awesome.
We'll be there. We will be there at the next, I guess, next week, and then we'll be there, and then we're going to the December 1st, 2nd, and 3rd in Jersey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Yes.
Any questions you have for us today?
No, at the moment, no. We're still reading and learning and watching the videos. We have been doing it pretty much continuously. Because we know that we realize, as Steve said at the training, you don't know what you don't know. So that's what we've been trying to grab hold of, all as much information as we can. We've been searching.
How
we've been following the plan. We've been searching online, searching on Craigslist, looking around for properties. Talked to a broker in Idaho already. So we've been trying to work the plan.
Well, I would go to umf.com and check out some New England properties. It's closer to home for you. Idaho's pretty far. What's the connection with Idaho?
I have family out there, so I know the area a little bit.
Okay. Well, that's smart then. If you have boots
my father
on the
ground, was from right? Idaho, so that's how we have the connection there, believe it or not. So how did New York get to Idaho?
We love Idaho potatoes.
Right.
We love
it was
Idaho
a World War II marriage. My father met my mom during World War II, and they settled in New York.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, it's good getting to know you, Stu. We look forward to many more phone calls, and we'll see if anybody else has a question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stu.
Thank you.
Okay, up next we have Clarita. Clarita, please go ahead.
Hello, Jeannie. Hi, Jermaine. Hey, Jeff.
How
y'all doing?
Hey, Clarita. How you doing?
Good. I'm calling because I'm having a hard time finding investment groups to join to be in my area. Like the real estate investment groups that I've been finding are all like small properties, like go up to like 4 or 5 units. No,
where are you located?
In New Jersey, northern New Jersey.
So Nick Tang has a big group down there.
Nick Tang, where is he out of?
He meets over by one of the airports. I think he meets like around Secaucus, doesn't he, Jeff?
Yeah, he's around that area.
Really?
Yeah.
But when I Googled
Clarita,
okay.
To reiclub.com.
reiclub.com?
Yep. Click on Real Estate Investment Groups and then click on New York and he'll come up.
Okay, I'll do that. Thank you. reiclubs.com.
Yep. Not clubs, just club. reiclub.com.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
Yes.
Okay, up next we have Francis. Francis, please go ahead.
Hi. This is I'm a newbie at this. I'm from San Jose, California. I attended the boot camp. And got really inspired and jazzed up. And so I decided, now, which is like, you know, two weekends ago. So I decided I'm to go for the whole program, the mentorship. And so now, next week, or is it on the 15th, I'm going to go to Boston, you know, to meet up with Dave Lindahl. Now, I'm new at this. What can you say to expect with my visit there to make it substantial for me and to learn, what should I look out for?
Well, you're going to go to the business learning. Coaching, right? You're going to business coaching?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're going to – are you okay? You're coughing?
Oh, yeah. I'm just going to drink some water.
Okay. So at the business coaching, there are going to be about 70 people there. So I would bring at least 100 business cards with you. And maybe you want to write out on a piece of paper your strengths so it's easier when you're talking to people that you can talk about your strengths and the types of deals you're looking for. because it's all about networking, and Dave's going to teach you how to set up a business, but you're going to be spending a lot of time with those people at the Harvard Club. So you'll be going to dinner on Dave's dime. You'll be coming over to the office and meeting everybody in the office. So, I mean, out of all of the events, the business coaching is probably the most intimate of them. This is one of the largest ones we've ever had. We usually have them around 30 people. But because our base is expanding more on the East Coast, more people are coming this time. So there's like 70 people going to be there. So you will reap a lot of benefits. It'll be fun.
That's awesome.
You'll be going on a bus, so don't be shy. Just talk about you and what you like, and make sure you listen to what they like so you can find commonality with people.
Uh-huh.
Plus, Francis, you're getting involved with like-minded individuals. So that's always a plus when you're around people who are thinking the same way that you're thinking. So keep that in mind also.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Okay. So, I don't have the same lingo as, you know, real estate people have to talk. This is all like a new field for me, but it's like this is something that I'd like to move forward with. So I just want to make sure I get the best out of the, you know, being there and the event. And so that's why I thought maybe you could give me some ideas, which is great. This is awesome. 100 business cards.
But what
I
think is good, Francis, it's really good that you came on this call and you asked this question, because now you know what to expect, and you're open to every single walk of life, which is really good, because you're going to meet people that have been brokers, people that have money to put into real estate, people that are looking for real estate. I mean, it's going to be a real melting pot for you, so it's a really good thing. Plus, we're going to take you on a bus from the hotel over here to the office, which is only about a mile and a half ride. And you're going to meet everybody that lives here. There's 30 of us that work here, and you're going to meet everybody. And then you're going to get back on the bus, and some of the people from the office are going to go on the bus with you, and you're going to drive into the Harvard Club in Boston. And then you'll be able to sit at a table, network with people, and then mingle around. And then you'll be able to come back on the bus. And these are lifelong friendships that you're going to secure.
Nice. Well, I'm looking forward to, you know, the 15th and 16th. And,
yep.
And definitely it's definitely going to be amazing.
Right.
Thank you so much.
It
Thank
will
you
be.
Very much.
You're
Maybe
welcome.
I'll
look forward to meeting you personally.
Meet you there.
Yes,
Thank
definitely.
You, likewise.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
Plus, with Frances, she's got to remember the education is second to none. So she's going to learn basically all the concepts, a lot of the concepts that Dave learned at Harvard as far as your business is concerned. And so what it will help you with is instead of making this, like some people will make this a part-time job or a hobby, Dave is going to teach you how to make this a business and how to sustain that business for years to come. So if you're looking at the educational part, that's what you're going to learn for those 2 days.
And if anybody else is on the call coming to that event, men need jackets. They need to wear sports jackets. No ties necessary, but sports jackets. And women dress business attire, no jeans, please.
I recommend bringing a tie, because when you walk into the Harvard Club, right, you'll see other people with ties on, and you'll say, be like, oh, man, I wish I brought a tie. So I suggest
well,
a tie.
Well, you can bring
you
one.
Bring
I
one.
Take it off. But you want to take your picture on the podium, too, because it'll look like you're giving a speech. If you have somebody take a few pictures with your cell phone so you can divvy them up to people, it'll look like you're giving a lecture at Harvard. It's pretty cool. And you walk the hallowed walls. I mean, it's really something to see the people that walk the walk before you. It's a pretty good take. It really is. And maybe there's a lecture going on that we can step into. Sometimes that happens, too. Any other questions?
Yes, we actually have Lisa with a question. Lisa, please go ahead.
Hi, well, actually, it's not morning for you guys. I'm out in California, Northern California.
It was afternoon.
So kind of right along what you're just talking about. Yeah. The business building event that's coming up, the 15th and 16th, you're just talking about. I kind of have the same questions right along with the December 1st through 3rd, the Commercial Training Academy. And then right after that, a couple days later, there's the Florida event. And so can you just kind of give a recap on the best way to get the most out of those two events?
Yes, I can. So the commercial training will be much more relaxed. Bob Bowman teaches it as well as his wife. I'm in the back of the room. There'll be 100 people in the room. You'll be learning about office complexes, retail spots, mobile home parks, any number of commercial, activities. Bob does an excellent job of bringing people up and having them role play, which he explains how it's done, and you'll get a lot out of that. And we encourage networking and mingling with people. As far as the Wilson conferences is concerned, that is going to be pretty fabulous. So Dave will meet you on the night of the 4th, and he'll meet for about an hour in the lobby. And there's 33 people signed up right now. So he'll let you know the best use of your time while you're there. He'll also have a call a week or so before the event, but the night of the event, he does meet you there. The next day, he tells you where you should really focus your time and energy into mingling with these family office people. He does a 15-minute speech. He gives away some books while he's there, and he'll be visible so you can ask him questions should you need to. There's going to be about 1,000 people there, so it'll be pretty intense. What I personally would do, and this nobody told me this, I'm making it up, is bring business cards, but I'd also bring like a little cheat sheet on yourself. So if you've been doing single family flips, or if you've been owned some multifamily properties, or you've been an owner of some kind of business, I would put a little trifold together, if you will, explaining what you're all about, and you can leave that with people, and it will leave a lasting impression because now they have something with your picture on it that you can talk about yourself in a business way, but it'll make it memorable for you.
That's great. Thank you. Great advice.
Okay. So you're not going to the sponsorship?
The sponsorship is which one?
Is the 17th, 18th.
The business building?
19th. Nope, the business building is the 15th and 16th, and then it follows with the sponsorship. Some people are going, some people don't have it as part of their package. They have to buy it independently. But that's where you go and meet 17 different sponsors who are going to qualify you for the mortgage.
Gotcha. Yeah, I don't see on the paper that I have, November 17th to the 19th, there's a bus tour out in San Francisco. Were those the dates you were talking
that's
about?
That's Jeff. Nope, it's a different one. It's something different. You probably don't have it as part of your package, but, it's something
okay.
to consider. It's only held once a year, so think about it.
Okay, good to know. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Jeannie, I want to say one more thing about the Wilson Conference, real quick. The difference between this is the Wilson Conference is considered a networking event, but the cool part about it is that everyone who's there knows what they're there for, so there's no pretending. So you can actually walk up to somebody and say, you know who's part of the family office, and say to them that I invest in real estate. What are you investing, or what are you looking to invest in? And they'll tell you right away. So there's no, like, you don't have to pretend. You don't have to, ask a lot of questions. People know what they're there for, so it's a good thing. You know, once Dave will go over this, but it's all about, you know, you could move on to the next person if they don't invest what you're looking to have them invest in. So that's the cool part about being at that Wilson Conference. Just thought I'd throw my 2 cents in there.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Thank you.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
Okay. We
got Mark Nelson's calling in with a call. Jeannie, Mark Nelson's calling in with a question. Mark Nelson. Yeah, he'll be calling in about a couple of seconds.
Okay, because I was going to end it, you know.
You were?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, it's
okay.
4 minutes before closing time.
It is. Well, we'll give him
one
minute.
I got a note. He writes, Jeannie, how are you doing? I tried calling in but can't get through. Do you have any short-term lenders for bridge loans? Construction loan is short-term, which is not hard money. We have an LOI and there was a shooting, so Fannie and Freddie will not work. We need to reposition for a year, then we can refinance. Thank you. I hope you are doing well. Yep, Mark, I'm going to call you offline. I do have two different people that do bridge loans, and I will give you that information when I call you. Sorry you couldn't make it on the call. Any other questions, operator?
No, Jeannie. No further questions at the moment.
Okay. If
all right.
You guys have
that's
something to say, say it. Okay. Everybody have a good week. For those of you coming to Boston next week, bring jackets and a sweater because they keep those rooms really cold. And I look forward to seeing each and every one of you there. And for those that are not coming, we'll see you on the call next week or the week after. Take care. Have a great week. Happy sunshine. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jeannie.
Thanks.